Real Success Blueprint, the podcast for realtors by realtors. I'm your host, Laura Dahl. I've been in real estate field for over 25 years. Throughout my career, I've learned valuable lessons, achieved significant successes, and now I'm excited to share these insights with you. So let's dive in and start building your blueprint for real success in real estate.
So bottom line on farming, I'm going to teach you today, has anybody that's on the call right now ever done any type of farming for any length of time? And if so, how long, what was your experience like?
I think Beth and I did it once. That shows you how.
Okay.
I think maybe we did it for a year.
Okay.
It was when we were actually living in the same neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And we gave it a year. We just didn't get anything out of it.
Okay. What kinds of stuff did you send?
I think maybe we were doing there were some series of postcards years and years ago. They were real pretty and they were series and you bought them in bulk. You bought for the whole year.
Sure.
It was some series of postcards that everybody was doing for a while. This was probably 10 years ago even.
Right. So it was already packaged, already developed. You just kind of bought the system and then you provided all the addresses for the neighborhood that you guys actually lived in and nailed that out over the course of a year.
And just got nothing.
Nothing. Okay.
But we did try. So that kind of turned us off on it. So honestly, that's why.
Was it expensive, Elisa?
Yeah, actually back in the day, I mean, probably $800 or $900.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And then, of course, we had split that, but it was just a huge investment to get nothing. I mean, I wish I could remember the series of it. It was something that everybody was using. Real pretty colored photos, glossy, pretty scenery.
Yeah, we've all gotten those, I think.
I had recipes on some, but it was all done for you. But but it was expensive back then. And just after a year, especially doing our neighborhood and got nothing, we just were
Were you, I'm sorry, I have some questions.
No, don't be sorry.
Were you guys newer agents, Elisa, at the time, or a few years?
We've had a few years under our belt. We just didn't get anything out of it.
Was there any follow-up with door knocking or anything that?
Nope.
Yeah. Mm-mm. Okay. So that's really the feedback I'm going to give you is just my observation. And I'm not saying you did anything wrong, but I think that's how agents learned how to farm years ago was, we'll just mail postcards and eventually people will call us. The reality is that what I'm going to teach you today is more of what I call a three-prong approach. And it requires a lot more interaction from the agent than just mailing an outgoing passive piece. And I'll just call it a piece. Okay. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about what farming is, how to do it effectively, setting your budget, how to select an appropriate place or neighborhood to farm, and then suggestions, and we're going to talk about and flesh out kind of strategies or best tips for how to get responses from the things that you're farming and what kinds of things you should send out. Sound good?
Yep.
Yes?
Yes.
All right, cool. All right, so talk about what farming is. Real estate farming is actually a marketing strategy that is planting, nurturing, and cultivating real estate leads that grow into future business. So it's typically done in an area close to your home. It's where your connection to the community is strongest. So like Beth and Lisa were talking about, they actually chose to farm their neighborhood. That is always typically the highest suggestion is for you to farm a neighborhood that you live in. Because you typically have stronger connections with your neighbors rather than just picking a random neighborhood that you don't know, you don't live in, and you're not part of that community. I will tell you that in the 20 some years, back when I got a license and Moby Dick was a minnow, You know, we did only, usually agents only farmed their own neighborhoods when I first got started. And now I think it's really about selecting a neighborhood that you want to become the expert. You want to become the local go-to person. When someone sees that neighborhood, they are, your name is synonymous with that neighborhood, but that takes time, it takes money, and it takes activity. And so I realize, and I'm not saying, Elisa, that $900 isn't a lot of money, but I will tell you, to effectively farm a neighborhood, you can expect to spend anywhere from $2,000 to $5,000 for the year to do it correctly. So if that's not something that's in your budget, then you're probably not going to get the kind of return that you're expecting to get. And I say that with all the love in my heart, but I'll just tell you that $900 is a lot for postcards, but I think that your budget probably needs to be a little bit higher. And it also will depend on the number of homes in the neighborhood. There are a lot of factors that are going to go into it. Five steps to choosing the right farm area. The first thing, first and foremost, is you need to consider your region and the demographics. You actually need to research the farm area specifically to make sure that it's the right area to farm for you and your business. So each and every one of you has a very unique business. You have a very unique customer or client. And when you're selecting an area to farm, you need to know all the data about that neighborhood. You need to know the average income, the average age of the people who live there. Is it a high commuter area? Is it high walkability score? Who are the employers that typically or surround the area? Who, you know, what types of homes are they? Are there 5 floor plans, 7 floor plans? So like someone like Taylor in his neighborhood, you know, he was involved on the development of the neighborhood front, like the new construction side. He knows the floor plans that are available in the neighborhood. He knows the different styles of the homes that are out there. You need to, if you're going to farm an area and you want to become the neighborhood expert, you have to know everything and anything there is to know about the neighborhood. So you need to familiarize yourselves with the floor plans, with the models that existed, what upgrades were available when they were building the neighborhood. You know, on average, where did the people spend most of their money on upgrades? You know, are there a lot of homes where they converted the bonus room into a bedroom, or is it an open loft in most of them? Did the builder give incentives for hardwood floors, you know, $5,000 in upgrades over the course? And so every buyer who bought, you know, used those $5,000 towards the same upgrades. You just should be familiar with those types of that type of information in the neighborhood. If you don't know this, let's say you're not Taylor and you didn't help these people all build their homes, how would you find this information out?
My guess is MLS or some type of data research tool.
You got it. You're going to use the MLS to search all the solds. You can compare the pictures. You're going to compare the comments, the public remarks, private remarks, to find out which, how many models there are. You can find a lot of that information from the MLS. You're correct. The local amenities. So you want to know in the neighborhood, for example, if I chose to farm McKay's Mill, I'm going to know that McKay's Mill has an Olympic-sized pool, a basketball court, a tennis court, 3 walking trails. Et cetera, et cetera. So whatever the amenities of the neighborhood are, you need to be familiar with them. You need to be familiar with the HOA rules and regulations. That's not on my list, but you do need to know that so that you know how much the HOA dues are. What do the dues cover? Are there any special assessments coming up? You need to be familiar with that kind of information. Any recent changes to the neighborhood? Are they building a new phase? Are they about to re-roof all of the condos? You know, what is going on in the neighborhood and what's getting ready to. Number 2 says to evaluate personal preferences and interests. So, all right, hello. Jared. Hi, Jared. How are you?
Hi, wonderful.
So, I'm sorry you joined. I didn't have a chance to let you in the conversation there.
No, you're fine. I just, when you were saying you could use the MLS, that's how you should find it. You may not be able to actually definitively know the data on you know, the different floor plans or the different things that a subdivision could have.
Correct.
You're just going to do your best to figure it out if you can't actually talk to a developer or whatnot, correct?
You got it. I mean, okay. You're going to try to figure out as much information as you can.
Yeah.
You know, and some of that's going to be available on the MLS. Some of that is not. Like, you're just going to try to do your best to find out as much and gather as much information about the neighborhood as you possibly can.
Like, I think there's five models in my subdivision, but I'm not sure. So there's no way that I can definitively find that out.
Well, you may be able to, hang on one second, Dina. You may be able to, Jared, find out from a lot of times some of these neighborhood websites are still out there on the internet. And you may be able to search your neighborhood website from when they were constructing it and see the different floor plans that are available.
Okay. From when they were originally built, they created a website and it may or may not exist.
Yeah, okay. And it may or may not. What were you going to say, Dina?
I was actually going to suggest that too, because we, before we set for this listing presentation that we gave a couple of weeks ago, we actually, because it was for Bridgemore down in Thompson Station. And so we actually, although I've shown several homes in there, we didn't know as much about it. But the other thing that we did is we actually went to the builder, called him up and said, hey, anything that you have over the last year as far as, you know, upgrades and your, you know, what your basic plans are versus your upgraded plans and things like that, can you send to us? And they did.
Yeah, perfect.
And so, you know, you can actually call up the builder if you can't find it on their website and have a conversation and just, you know, let them know. Just, you know, let them know what you want. And a lot of times they're very amenable to send that stuff to you.
Yeah. If the builder's still in business, I'll tell you, I've farmed neighborhoods where the builders have gone bankrupt and they're no longer around. Yeah. So you have to gather as much information as you can on your own sometimes, but you are 100% right. If you have access to anybody that does know, gather as much as you can about the neighborhood. You know, one of the things it says on number two is just evaluate your personal preferences. So I may live in a neighborhood that is all new construction, but I specialize in my business in mid-century homes. So I use that as an example here. Or maybe I'm a condo specialist. So obviously the area that I'm farming is based on my interest or what I want to be known for or what my target client is, not necessarily just the neighborhood that I live in. So you basically just want to pick, is there a specific type of neighborhood, type of home, type of construction that you want to focus on? You should choose a neighborhood that has well-defined boundaries. The reason I bring this up is because, especially in Nashville, in the urban core, where does one neighborhood stop and one neighborhood start? You'll see a lot of neighborhoods butt up next to each other, even where new construction is happening, but phase two or three is a totally different builder, totally different development. But the neighborhoods connect to each other. And so you should be able to choose a neighborhood that has very well-defined boundaries where you know where the neighborhood starts and stops. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Cool. All right, number
Park, Sylvan Heights.
Right. Exactly. And it's like, where does one start? Where does one stop? But if it's not predetermined where anyone knows, then you're just going to choose where you want the geographic limits to be for where you're going to start or stop mailing. But I will tell you that it's just better to choose a neighborhood that has very predefined lines of where the neighborhood starts and stops. All right. Your next big step is actually you need to research sales activity in the potential farm area. So once you select an area that you want to work in or a type of home or something like that, your next step is to make sure that the neighborhood you're choosing has enough sales activity to make it worthwhile. So you want to find an area that has high sales prices, relatively high turnover, and low competition. Low competition to me, we're going to talk about that in just a second, is different for everybody. I will tell you, when I first moved to Nashville in McKaysville, I'm having a brain fart of even being able to tell you his name. Chip Kerr was the basic it was as if he owned McKay's Mill. And he had a high number of percent of the market share in the neighborhood. The reason he had such a high number of homes listed in the neighborhood is because he spent a bazillion dollars marketing that neighborhood and farming that neighborhood. And so if I were at the time that I moved to Nashville, the time that I moved to McKay's Mill, I may not have opted to choose that farm area because I felt like it was already kind of established with another agent. Now, I personally, Laura Dahl, I always look at it as if I think I can do something better, then I don't care what the competition looks like. I don't care that it's already established by somebody else. I don't care that that agent already has 50% of the listings if I think that I can do a better job. But that's me personally. I know the real estate coaches in the world will tell you that if an agent already has more than 10 or 15% of the market share in that neighborhood, that you should choose a different neighborhood. But I'll tell you 100% that if I feel like I can do something better, or I feel like I have something more of value to offer, then I'm not afraid to market that neighborhood or to promote myself in that neighborhood. So your first thing is you want to calculate the average sales price in the neighborhood and what the potential commission is. Obviously, the commission is going to be based on what you're going to charge these sellers. But for some of you, you know, you have autonomy to choose what commission rate you charge. And so you're going to calculate what that would be based on any listings that you took. Number two, or second bullet, says consider the turnover rate. I will tell you that you need to look for 6% or higher in order for you to get the return on your investment that you need. How do you calculate the turnover rate? Does anybody know?
No.
Okay, you're going to take the total number of houses in the neighborhood, and you're going to divide by the number that sold in the last 30 days. Right, so you're going to have a percentage of the total number of houses that are available, and you're going to have that divided by the number that sold.
Why is it by the month and not,
well,
say,
you could do 6 months. You could, it just depends on what the average days on the market is for me. So in most neighborhoods in Middle Tennessee, we're still under 40-day market time in most neighborhoods. So I'm going to look at it on a monthly basis.
Okay, so what you're saying is define your area, take the total number of houses within that area, and divide that by the number of houses that have sold or that have closed.
Well, that's the same thing to me. If it's closed.
Okay. Okay. So, well, yeah, I'm just saying the ones under contract versus the ones sold, but you're saying the ones.
Well, I'm going to look at under contracts too. I mean, they're going to be in the same category for me because they are going to sell, but typically I want to look, for me, I'm looking at a 30-day window.
Okay.
But that's only because the days on the market is 30
right.
days. If I'm looking at a neighborhood where a higher price range, where the days on the market maybe are 120 days, then I want to look over 6 months, not over 30 days.
I'm kind of thinking about our neighborhood here in Forest Hills, and sometimes those, you know, they are a little bit higher price point. They sit out there for a little bit longer. So maybe, you know, even a 60 or 90 day kind of.
Yep. It just depends on the neighborhood. But what you definitely don't want is you don't want a neighborhood like, let me see, like there's a neighborhood in Franklin. I'm having a brain fart completely. It is, it's in the back of Fieldstone Farms.
Cottonwood.
Cottonwood. So nobody sells a house in Cottonwood. They die there. Right?
I know.
So that's kind of what my point is you don't want to select a neighborhood where nobody ever sells, right? Yeah. You want a neighborhood where there's a decent, you want a decent turnover rate where there actually are houses that are going to come on the market. You don't want a tiny little neighborhood that only has 30 houses in it and only one house every 6 years comes available on the market. You want to pick something that has a decent amount of turnover, okay? In terms of researching the competition, like I said, I'm not afraid. I know I have what I have is of value, and I know that I can take a neighborhood that is very saturated with another agent and still roll into town with new ideas, fresh ideas, and be able to drum up some business for myself. But I will research the competition and find out, what are other agents who are farming in this area sending? Do I want to send something similar? The answer is no. I don't want to send anything similar. I want to send something completely different, especially if somebody else has been farming this neighborhood for 10 years, for 5 years. I want to send them something that's absolutely different. And then it says assemble the real estate farm area data. And I've given you a sample here about three areas that I was trying to compare, three different neighborhoods. The first area has 150 total homes in it. The estimate or budget selected for that was $2,100. You're going to apply your own budget and your own thought process. I will tell you, there are ways to farm a neighborhood that do not rely on direct mail. You could door knock, you could drop things off on people's porches. There are ways that you can get products or items in their hands without direct mail, which is part of the cost that are estimated. This particular farm area, number one, it had the average sales price of $300,000, which meant my commission would be about approximately $9,000 per house. The total homes sold in the farm in the previous 3 years were 15. That's going to be on the lower side for what I would be looking for. If I were looking today in Nashville, I would want more than 15 houses in the last 3 years, but that's me personally. The turnover rate for that was 10%. Because there were 150 total homes, 15 sold in the last 3 years. Income potential, $135,000, and that's obviously if I took 15 homes times the commission. Average days on the market for that example was 43. And if you look at that and compare to area 2 and 3, you have bigger neighborhoods. It's going to cost you a little bit more to market because there are more homes. But the sales price is also higher. So my average commission is going to be higher. The total number of sales in that farm area, number 2, was a little bit higher, but the turnover rate was a little lower. Income potential was higher. Average days on the market was a little bit lower. And there's only 3 listings currently in there. So looking at these 3 side by side, which area do you think that you would select to farm?
2.
Anybody else?
1.
I would probably say 1.
1 or 3.
Okay. So
I would say one.
Yeah. Me personally, I probably would have picked 1 because I feel like that is probably a more mid-range. I like the average days on the market is less than 60, which is attractive to me, but I like the current number of active listings that are on the market. I like that to be a little higher. 3 scares me a little bit, but 3 out of 200 homes to me kind of makes me feel like there's not enough turnover in the neighborhood. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, I'm looking at the turnover rate and, you know, I mean, according to your model, over 6%.
Right.
And the fact that, you know, I mean, a lot of these homes are, I'm looking at price points and these homes are, they're affordable
right.
for people. Right. So.
And here's the other thing I'm going to notice. And if this is again, 300,000, if I'm going to apply this example to Nashville, a $300,000 sales price to me typically are going to be people who have never sold a home before. That's going to be people right. that this is probably their first home. Or the first time that they're selling a home. I feel like as an agent, I have a lot of value to offer someone who's never sold a home before. So I would rather farm a neighborhood from a place of education in a more affordable neighborhood that maybe is a lot of first-time sellers, because I have more to offer than a neighborhood who these people have sold a house 2 or 3 times before. Does that make sense?
It's always good to be the expert.
You got it. You got it. You know, I'm a fan of being an expert.
All right. Laura?
Yes.
Quick question. Could you use, like, in determining all of this, could you use, like, the new, like, HomeSnap has that new tab where you're most likely to list?
Yep.
Could you use that in your determining also?
You could, of course, if you're going to see in a particular neighborhood that you have a lot more of those, I would say yes. But again, you got to remember those are algorithms where somebody has just indicated that they're interested in selling. There still may not be I wouldn't use that as my only criteria, of course.
Sure.
Yeah. But you certainly could use that to help, help you select a neighborhood if you're trying to decide between two, you know. Number five says decide on your farm area. Let me make sure. Decide on your farm area, which is after you've collected the information, you're going to find the one that best meet your criteria. And you're going to establish yourself as the go-to real estate agent. When you've decided on your next step is to build a reputation as a real estate agent. So, this is where a lot of agents miss the mark. And the reason I say that is because most agents will send outgoing passive messages, whether that's just a postcard or they're mailing a C of A. To me, that's not enough. You must build authority and you must establish yourself as the expert. I want you to imagine yourself and how many of you are homeowners or whatever, how many postcards or mailing pieces do you get from other realtors in your neighborhood? What kinds of things are they sending out? I'll tell you what they send out if nobody knows. What do they send out?
I get in mine. Of course, it's slowed down quite a bit.
I feel like mine is here has slowed down a lot. When we first moved in, I felt like we were getting, this was 5 years ago, I felt like we were getting all kinds of stuff. But a lot of things here, like in the Green Hills, Forest Hills area, comes in the form of those, the newsletters that come out. There's a lot of advertising in there. I mean, basically, Steve Frederick owns, if you will, you know, this area pretty much, Bellmead, Forest Hills, Green Hills. But that being said, we don't get a lot of flyers anymore here.
Okay.
I think most people send just sold and just listed.
Yep. What else do they send?
I get a ton of shit all the time of all different things.
I get people that say, I've got a buyer for your house. You know, please give me a call. They want in your neighborhood. And I crack up because, you know, you're sending that to a real estate agent. But again, it just shows you you're just sending. But my neighborhood, I get that a lot. But it has slowed down. But that's always what jumps out to me is we have a buyer for my neighborhood. If I'm interested in selling, please give them a call.
Right. And you know that chances are that they're full of shit. They don't have a buyer for your house, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know that. So you know it's fake. It's not authentic. You already, as an agent, know that it's doubtful. What do you think the common public thinks?
It's bullshit.
It's bullshit. They're not going to call you, right? So my whole thing is I'm trying to encourage you to make sure that you guys are being creative with what you send out. It must be something that grabs people's attention. It cannot be the same thing every month. So let's say you choose a neighborhood you're going to farm. You identify that you're going to mail something to them or you're going to touch these people 12 times, which I'm going to tell you right now is the bare minimum you should be sending anything or interacting with people. You need to actually plan for a very minimum once a month. But it probably should be 2 to 3 times a month. But it's going to be, you're not going to mail things 3 times a month. You're going to mix it up with a mixture of mailing something, interacting with them in person, and gathering email addresses or database information to interact with them in some third way. Dina, were you getting ready to ask something?
When you said a minimum of 12 touches, I was wondering if you were meaning a minimum of once a month.
Well, that
over the course of a year.
That's the most on the minimum side, what the minimum is, I think that you should do. But honestly, right. I really feel like you need to be reaching them 36 to 40 times a year.
Okay.
Okay. All right. It says 9 ways to build authority in your real estate farm area. 1 is to create direct mail campaigns. So my advice to you is don't be like every other agent in your neighborhood and don't just send a CMA to the neighborhood once a month. First of all, the CMA is boring. Second of all, most people don't know how to interpret it. And third of all, it's just the same thing that everybody else is sending. So don't let that be the only thing that you send to the neighborhood. The second thing says distribute door hangers. And we're going to talk about examples of what else you can send in a minute. Distribute door hangers. Obviously, those don't cost you money other than the printing of the door hanger. You could hire a teenager to go put them on the door. You could go drop them off yourself. But what do you put on a door hanger that's of value?
Coupon. Contact information.
Coupons are correct. Contact information. Obviously, you want them to call you or to reach out to you. What else would you put on there? The coupon is good.
You could do some average price sale, sale price in your neighborhood, average days on the market.
Correct.
Stuff like that, I think.
You got it. And if you are an experienced agent, or let's say you've had 2 or 3 sales in one particular neighborhood, compare the average to your data if you have that data to compare it to. So if I sold 3 houses in a neighborhood, then I want to show that the average days on the market is 47 days, but my average in this neighborhood was only 26. The average sales price in this neighborhood was $439, but my average was $464. Right? If you're trying to establish the authority or the expert in the neighborhood, then you need to demonstrate what that looks like. But some of you don't have more than one sale in one neighborhood, so that's hard for you to do, right? But you can advertise the average in this neighborhood is 46 days, but my average overall was only 27 days. If I sold more than one house, do I have an average days on the market? Yes.
Yep.
Right? Number 3 says knocking on doors. Obviously, you have to put yourself, I've never been a huge advocate of door knocking. I will tell you it is effective for some people. You have to be approachable. You have to be non-threatening. You also have to be friendly and not scary. And I don't like people coming to my doors because it gets the dogs involved. You decide for yourself whether or not door knocking works for you. I'm just telling you it's one way to follow up on the things that you're sending out and dropping off. And I'm going to talk about a strategy on knocking on doors in just a minute that I do support, that I do think works. Number 4 says to advertise. Obviously, you can use apps like Nextdoor. If you have a neighborhood community page, there are ways to advertise yourself without advertising yourself. There are ways to be the expert in the neighborhood without promoting your business down everyone's throat every time you get a second. Number 5 says to set up Facebook advertising. Obviously, you can do sponsored ads and target certain neighborhoods. You can target down to the zip code. You can use targeted advertising to set up advertising. You can actually run ads specifically to McKay's Mill. If I wanted to be the authority in McKay's Mill, then all my ads would say, are you thinking of selling your house in McKay's Mill? Do you know the data for homes that have sold in McKay's Mill? And all my ads that I'm running and putting in front of these people's faces say McKay's Mill. Number 6, obviously participating in online local forums. You need to join whatever groups are specific to your neighborhood that you're trying to farm if you can. Some groups are kind of picky, and if you don't live there, they won't let you in the group. So if you don't live in the neighborhood you're farming, you're gonna have to find a way to be the expert online in those local forums to be able to do that. Nextdoor app does allow you to advertise in neighborhoods that you don't live in. But again, it's just going to be dependent on your budget. Number 7 says attend local events and meetup groups. So this is part of the 3-prong approach that I'm going to teach you guys, is that you should be the one hosting the local events for the farm area that you're farming. But are there any meetup groups that you can create or that already exist that you can attend and become a part of? 8 is signing up for exclusive leads. Again, that's going to be budget dependent. And then 9 says set up your website. We're going to talk about that in just a second. So I'll tell you right now, your biggest tips for success are going to be every message that you put out, whether it's a postcard, a handwritten letter, something that you drop off, a door hanger, a drop by, whatever it is, it must be something of value. It must be something that is different. It's got to look different. It has to get their attention differently. And again, I'm going to tell you my best advice is to put yourself in the shoes of, you know, think about yourself. What things do people mail to you that cause you to open it? Is it a colored envelope, an oversized envelope? Does it have a picture on it? Does it, you know, it comes down to, are the dresses handwritten? Are you printing them on labels? You know, think about yourself when you open your mail. What does it take to get you to open it? Number three says, or two says, every message must have a call to action. So I'm going to tell you right now that if all your letters that go out say, call me, what are the likelihood that the people are going to actually call you from the thing you sent them?
Slim to none.
Slim to none, less than 1%. So my encouragement to you is to find a different call to action. If you mail out a postcard, and this is part of that three-prong approach that I'm teaching you, if you mail out the postcard isn't going to just say, call me. It's going to say, go to this website and download your free coupon. Go to this website and download your free seller's report. Go to this website and get my 12 steps for getting your house ready for market, or the things that all home inspectors are going to find on your report. Like, you need to have a call to action that gives the power to the person that you're sending it, knowing that it's likely that their first action is not going to be to pick up the phone. Give them something else to do. Number three says statistics are powerful tools, but they get dry fast. And this is why I'm telling you, if all you send out are market data and stats, you're going to lose your audience. That is not interpreted by them. They don't understand how to read it, and it doesn't mean much to them. It's boring. Number four, your messaging must be consistent. So most agents that I know that attempt farming will try it for 3 or 4 months and then they stop because they don't have the budget to continue doing it for the year, or they didn't get a return right away. So they figured I might as well just stop because I'm not going to waste any more money. And it's going to take a minimum of 12 to 14 messages to even start getting someone's attention. So if you only do something 3 times, you haven't even run the race yet. You haven't even started. Number five says start collecting email addresses and build a database of neighbors. This is where the power of your farming comes in. You cannot just send outgoing passive messages to people and expect to build a business of people that make your phone ring off the hook. You must start collecting email addresses for the neighborhood. And if you don't have an email database of the neighborhood, then you need to find creative ways to get your neighbors to give you their email address. Part of one of the ways that you can do that is, again, my call to action is not call me. Of course, my phone number is on the item that I'm mailing. But the call to action is go to this website, enter your email address, and I'm going to send you a coupon for a free pie. I'm going to send you a coupon for a free scoop of ice cream. I'm going to send you a coupon for a free oil change. Mm-hmm. I'm going to send you a coupon for a free dog bath. I'm going to send you a coupon for a Starbucks gift card for $5. But you're going to give me your email address to get it.
Laura.
Yes, ma'am.
Quick question. So I love this idea because I love free dog baths. I love all that good stuff. How does that work?
One of two ways. You either contact the business and you say, I'm doing a mailing of 1,000, depends on how many homes are in your neighborhood. Like, I'm going to send out a 1,000 piece mailing to my neighborhood. I am expecting, 100, and that's on a good day. I'm expecting 100 to respond. Can I prepay you for 100 coupons? Or would you like to partner with me and donate 100 coupons? And obviously, if we send out 100, maybe only 10 are going to be redeemed. You can either work out in advance with the business to prepay, or you can work out with the business to donate a portion or split the cost or whatever that is, because you're advertising and promoting that business for whatever coupon you're giving out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, spend money to make money.
Well, a lot of times in this business, unfortunately, yes, but I will tell you that a lot of times if you are promoting the business, some of those businesses are going to be willing to give you, sure, mm-hmm. I'll give you 20 free scoops of ice cream or, you know, 50 scoops of ice cream because you're promoting my business on your website, you're promoting it us on Facebook and Instagram or whatever. It's worth it to me to give you that because of the exposure my business is going to get in this neighborhood with 1,000 homes.
So I'm just curious, have you or anyone that you've known or anyone on here, have they done that before? Has it been successful? How do you, what, I mean, we're talking about how to do it, but.
Yes, I have done it many times. In South Carolina, I farmed a neighborhood that had 3,000 homes in it. Every single month we sent a coupon, and it was a coupon to a different local business. Most of those businesses, I split the cost of the coupon with them. Some of them donated it for free. Some of them I just offered to prepay for 100 whatever. So like a dozen donuts, it cost the store $3.12 for a dozen donuts. And I prepaid for, you know, 100 dozen donuts at $3.25 or something.
Okay.
So you're going to just have to be creative. And my whole thing is that the coupon is something of value. Now, I may not send a coupon every month. I might send a coupon every third month. And on the second month or third month, I'm doing something different.
Right.
Maybe the second month, I'm actually knocking on the doors to see if they received the coupon from last month or handing out additional coupons for ones that weren't redeemed or whatever. But you're going to have to vary up the message and be creative in what you send out. But it should be something that is valuable to the people who are getting it. And data and statistics are valuable, but the people aren't going to see that as valuable. And you certainly don't want to do that every month.
So theoretically, should it get cheaper to farm a neighborhood the longer you do it?
Yes, because you maybe don't have to send out as much. So if I did something for 2 or 3 years, on year three, I might not have to reach out to those people with the same kind of expense that it took me to get 4 responses the first year.
Yeah.
The other part about collecting email addresses or building a database means that I can send outgoing messages anytime I want. You have given me your email address and opted in to download a coupon, which allows me to market to you anytime I want to. So here's the other thing. If I'm sending something on a regular basis and on the minimum 12 times a year, I also take a listing in this neighborhood. If I have a database of email addresses for all my neighbors, or maybe 70% of my neighbors, every time I take a listing, guess who's going to see it? All 70 of those neighbors, right? But if I don't build an email address database, or I don't build a database of them, then I'm going to rely on the postal service to mail them something or me to drop something off. Whereas the adverse is, if I'm collecting a database, then I get to send outgoing marketing messages to these people. Every time I take a listing, every time we have an event, every time I sell a house in the neighborhood. Those are additional outgoing messages that establish me as the expert. Does that make sense? Laura's three-prong approach. I put Laura's on here. I'm sure it's not mine, but this is just my advice to you. I'm going to start at the very top. You should create some type of landing page or website or Facebook group, a kind of home, if you will, a place where people are going to go for this neighborhood. So a lot of neighborhoods already have a Facebook page for the neighborhood, or they have a website that's managed or run by the HOA. I'm not talking about that type of site. I'm talking about a place where they can go anytime they want and see data about the neighborhood. Anytime they want, they can find out where the events are happening and around our neighborhood. They can go to that website to find them. They can go to download coupons. they can go to see the houses that are for sale in the neighborhood. They can go to see pictures of welcoming neighbors to the neighborhood. Like, do you guys understand I'm telling you to create a central hub, whatever that looks like to you?
Yes.
Does that make sense?
And that's not your website.
And it could be a landing page on your website, but it's basically going to be somewhere that you are allowed. You're basically going to be in control of it. You want to be the one right. who is in charge of the content that goes there. Yeah. Okay. On the left-hand side, you'll see value items. So this is where your outgoing messages are going to be: postcards, letters, coupons, CMAs, drive-bys. I once did a mailing to, and this is a military town, so again, this may not be applicable here, but I mailed a blank key. I ordered them online in bulk. I think I got like 5,000 keys for $100. The blank key, basically, I mailed in a little plastic clear box to 1,200 homes that were on a Marine Corps base. And inside the little box was a little card that said, you know, if your housing allowance is between $1,200 and $1,800, this key could be, you know, you could spend your housing allowance to buy your own home. But the key was something that was tangible. You know how like a lot of these charities will send out a nickel or a free stamp or a pair of gloves or whatever it is. They've put something symbolic or something tangible that's 3D item that is memorable, right? Yeah. So this is my advice to you, is that what could you send that is more than just a letter, that is not expensive, that is something that somebody opens and will remember what you sent them. The key blank didn't open anything. It didn't actually, like, they didn't use the key for anything, but it was representative of what I was trying to sell, which was a house. Does that make sense?
Laura, do you have any suggestions? You know, I think we all get bombarded in our news feed and things like that of, you know, companies that supposedly have all these unique gifts and things, you know, touches. Do you have anything personally that you've liked to use, a company that where you get things that we might be able to kind of browse? And because I've actually done that. I could get lost on the internet all day long.
Sure.
Looking on how to be different or whatever. But do you have any websites that you
would... There's a couple we're going to talk about at the end when I talk about resources. I will tell you this though, and this is just my two cents, take it or leave it. The most effective campaigns that I've ever run were not pre-programmed, templated campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
They were things that I designed and developed using my own creativity. And I got more responses out of anything that I sent that was not from a pre-programmed company. I got much more responses and much better responses than something that I bought from some other place. And that's including postcards. It's including newsletters. Anything that I created myself that was personal and that was more, that was creative from my brain, I had a better response to.
Yeah. I like that approach anyway. I think it's definitely more genuine.
Yes. And I think people respond better to it because they know it's not programmed. It's not, you know, again.
And it's something that you can put your personality to as well. We all have different personalities and we all, you know.
Right. Well, it's also cheaper. I'm going to be very honest with you. Like, certainly if I had bought those boxes and the keys and the card from another company, I would have paid four times as much than doing it myself.
Yeah.
And that's the other part. I know we're busy. I get it. I don't want you to spend 3 weeks putting a mailing together, but I'll tell you, you can source all of these tangible things, the 3D things online in bulk, a whole lot cheaper and assemble them yourself than paying some other company that you're going to pay four times as much because someone did it for you. All right. The last prong on there, does everybody understand or are your wheels turning about what kinds of valuable items you can send or drop off or deliver?
Oh, I love it. I have ideas already.
Good. I love that. And then the last prong is events. So, and I put multiple times a year. So here's my thing. In order to really establish a presence and authority and to become the expert in a particular neighborhood, you must be present and engaged in that neighborhood. So if you don't live there, then you must be the source of the information. How do you become the source? Is you have to establish a presence in the neighborhood. One of the ways that you establish the presence is to host events in the neighborhood. I think my next, I'm going to go down to this one and I'll go back to the previous slide. Sample neighborhood events. You can host photos with Santa for the neighborhood, an Easter egg hunt, a school supply drive. You know, I'm all about tying in an event with a charitable, giving so that you get more people involved. When you do a canned food drive in the neighborhood or school supply drive in the neighborhood, something like that, you get much more participation. And it is not salesy. You're doing things to help the community, so you get the visibility without being salesy. The other one says a pumpkin patch. You can actually have pumpkins delivered to a community area in the neighborhood and have people come pick out a free pumpkin. Again, that costs money. Sometimes you can get sponsors to help you pay for these things. You can host a community yard sale. You can do a pie delivery at Thanksgiving or on Pie Day. Be creative. I wrote ice cream social, a barbecue works too. I usually combine the school supply drive with the end of summer barbecue. So, I have I just make Boston butts myself, enough barbecue, and then get people to bring school supplies and donate those. So barbecue was a good idea. Anybody else have suggestions?
I was just thinking, because I've been in the hospitality industry for 14 years, could probably partner with a bunch of restaurants to host an event or something where you can share kind of the marketing cost and all those things related to that.
You got it.
So this is all dependent on you renting whatever park that said neighborhood or subdivision has.
Yeah, sometimes you don't have to rent anything. Sometimes there's a common area in the neighborhood, like where the playground is or whatever, and you may have to get HOA permission. There may not be an HOA. That's why in the beginning where we were talking about, evaluating which kind of neighborhood you want to do, if you don't live in the neighborhood and there is a very big HOA, you're going to run into more red tape of doing events in the neighborhood without getting their permission. I would tell you that you may want to select a neighborhood that either has a very minimal HOA to no HOA or work with the HOA about how you can be able to host events within the neighborhood without stepping on toes or upsetting people. So like Candace, I'll use Candace as an example. She put on a huge event around Halloween, I think. And she, in her neighborhood, so she had food trucks all around the neighborhood. She had different sponsors that gave out all kinds of gift cards. They also did a canned food drive to help with the food pantry. But her HOA flipped their lid because there were 7 or 8 other realtors who live in the neighborhood who were upset that they weren't participating in the event or that she was getting all this promotion for the event. And they used the HOA against her to kind of shut down the event and to take the advertisements down off of the web page. And again, if you have your own website, then you are in control of the content. And mm-hmm. You can host anything you want in your neighborhood, but you do want to work with the HOA to support your event that's for the enjoyment of the neighborhood. You don't want a neighborhood where there are 20 realtors who live in the neighborhood and they're all going to be pissed that you're hosting events in their neighborhood without their participation. Okay. Or, yes.
Do you recommend, if you run into that, do you recommend if you have the ability hosting things at your home?
Absolutely. If you're okay with that, some people don't want, you know, if they don't live in the neighborhood, then that's harder, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm just, if we're talking about neighborhoods and you live in the neighborhood.
Then, yeah. Then 100%, then you definitely want to open your home to your neighbors, because that's going to help you build the camaraderie and build the community, and opening right. your house as part, hey, I'm a neighbor. All right. So farming, some farming ideas. One of the things you can do is send out a monthly flyer with sales stats. We talked about this. I told you to include your stats, your average days on the market, your sales price compared to the averages in the neighborhood. Specifically, you know, just make it clear, are these your data and stats just in general, or do you have data for this particular neighborhood as well? You can do a quarterly postcard with a coupon for local business. You can do that monthly. You can do that as however often as you want. You should be previewing all listings in the neighborhood, regardless of who listed them. So, for example, I'm farming a neighborhood, but I see another agent listed a property. I'm going to reach out to the listing agent and ask them if I could preview it, because I need to be familiar with every house that's listed in the neighborhood. I'm also going to feature that listing on my VIP website. I'm going to give credit to the listing agent, but I'm going to showcase that listing, because chances are, if I'm doing a lot of marketing and promoting in the neighborhood and someone has a listing in the neighborhood, chances are I'm probably going to represent a buyer who's interested in buying that house. Number four is one of my greatest ideas, be the welcome wagon. So, you know those giant greeting cards you can get from the dollar store or online? They're like super big cards, mm-hmm. oversized. Go door knock through the neighborhood and invite the neighbors to sign a card welcoming a new homeowner, and then deliver the card to the new neighbor. So again, I don't love just knocking on random doors trying to be a salesperson, but I don't mind door knocking, and I find it to be effective when you have some community service related item or some type of, you know, like community building item. So I would recommend that you buy a greeting card for a new neighbor that just moved in and go around and get the various homeowners to just sign a welcome note or something, and then drop off a pie or dinner or something to the new neighbor. But be the welcome wagon for any new people moving into the neighborhood, whether you sold them that house or not. Five says a postcard with a home valuation code requiring registration. So remember, I like to be the gatekeeper of the information, which means I'm going to send you a postcard. It's going to ask you to go to my VIP website. So if I'm farming Cannonwood in Franklin, then my website is going to be cannonwoodvips.com or cannonwoodsellers.com or Cannonwood, whatever it is. It's basically specifically for Cannonwood. And then every piece that I send out is going to have a code to go to the website and download whatever, or enter your email address. And that way I can track actually who went. When you have a code on it, a lot of times that will let you track what percentage of the people actually did what you asked them to do. Anybody that goes to my website to do a home valuation, I'm going to follow up in person with a seller package. So if you go to my website and you enter in your information and you request a home valuation, I'm going to be knocking on your door within 24 hours with a seller package that has just an introduction to me, an introduction to what I do when I'm marketing and selling houses. And it's going to have like a home seller's guide and some tips and some CMA information. And then obviously six, just listed or just sold, regardless of who listed or sold them. So I do want to remind you guys that if it is not your listing or not your sale, you do need to give credit where credit is due. So you need to put on there that it was listed by Coldwell Banker, if Coldwell Banker is the listing agent who had the listing. But can you market or promote activity in a neighborhood that you were not directly involved in? Yes. But you should probably give credit and you should get permission. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Did I lose my other eight people?
Nope.
I I was eating, so I muted. Okay.
That's fine. That's fine. All right.
Other, I'm back now.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay,
okay.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
When you say give credit, if I'm promoting someone else's listings, especially if it's one of our agents' listings, I'm always giving credit. Do you suggest, do we have to give credit to the person or to the broker?
Well, you have to do the broker.
Right.
Is the rule. I'm just telling you that because of who I am, right, I'm always going to just call the listing agent and say, hey, just so you know, I'm doing a mailing in the neighborhood. You had a listing that sold. Congratulations. Just wanted you to know that the data is going to be included on my postcard. I don't need the permission. I'm just advising.
But you're gonna list the actual agent as well instead of just the brokerage.
It depends. I mean, the minimum is like the brokerage. Them? Yeah, it depends on if I like them or not. 100%.
Okay.
Other ideas: utilize the Nextdoor app. Certainly, Instagram. If you're gonna use hashtags, you're gonna have much more defined localism and hyper local. You definitely can do spotlights of the amenities of the neighborhood. So, for example, if I am farming McKay's Mill, then I want to post pictures all around the neighborhood on my website, on my social media. I want to do videos of the community pool, the workout room, the community center, the walking trails, the basketball court, the tennis court. I literally, in that one neighborhood, just gave you 9 different things that you could highlight in the neighborhood. Those highlights, if you put them on YouTube, then you have 9 YouTube videos out there that are permanently attached to that neighborhood and to you. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes. And then neighborhood infographics, obviously you could do on your website, on your social media, on the mailings, you could put together infographics that say, we have 500 homes in our neighborhood, 13 of those are under contract, 10 sold in the last 6 months, and over 75% have more than $200,000 in equity. How can you find out how much potential equity the houses have in the neighborhood?
Tax record.
Tax record. You can look and see what these people paid for them, run data on what the average price in the neighborhood is now, and do the math. Does that make sense?
Got it.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Now I'm going to give you some samples of various, these are mostly postcards. Now, I will tell you, in my opinion, postcards are boring as hell. They are also passive, and they are usually the first thing that goes in the trash. So I don't love postcards, but I have given you a lot of samples of postcards just to get your wheels turning. Utilize what's on the postcards and figure out, is there a way that I can send an outgoing message to somebody using some of this content in a different way? Okay, so is there another way that I can present this neighborhood update without just sending a postcard?
You could do a door hanger.
Hangers, yeah.
Yep, what else?
Coupon.
A coupon, yeah. But if I'm trying to get out data, what's another way of presenting data without sending a static postcard?
Newsletter.
A newsletter, email. Yes.
Yeah.
How about a video, a Facebook Live video? Yes. Join me on the Facebook Live video where I break down the data and explain to you what it is.
I like that.
Okay. Some other samples, you know, real estate opportunities are knocking at your door. So obviously it's specific to, it's just, you know, that this is a real estate postcard. The other one says frequently asked questions about real estate. This basically says, here are most, a lot of questions a lot of people have. I have the answers. You can do a Facebook Live. Join me on Tuesday, this Tuesday at 7 o'clock, where I answer the 10 most common questions that people in our neighborhood have. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. Stop wasting your money on rent. A lot of, I will tell you that I have farmed apartment complexes before because it's easy, especially in Nashville where the rents are so high. A lot of these luxury apartments are very amenitized. But you can basically equate what a lot of people are paying in apartments with a mortgage on a single family home and get people out of apartment living. So a lot of agents will send out schedules. I kind of laugh at this because I list houses all the time where there are four realtor magnets on the refrigerator, but my sign is out front. So I laugh only because at least this has a shelf life. So if you are going to send it, try to send something that is more than just today, like give them something that they would keep, whether it's in the drawer, on the refrigerator, something that they can refer back to over a longer period of time. I liked this one on the left because it's humorous. So it says, you know, selling your home shouldn't ruin your home life. And it's just such a shit show of whatever's going on in this picture that it at least would get your attention. So the next one says pondering a new pad. So be creative. Is there some type of eye-catching graphic combined with language that gets somebody's attention? Thinking of moving with a cow. I don't want to be associated with a cow, but if you sold farms, that might not be a bad thing. recipes are usually good because people keep those. They'll stick them in their recipe book, stick them in a drawer, something like that, so it has a lot more shelf life. I like to make it more interactive. So again, I'm going to send out a postcard with a recipe, but I'm going to send everyone to my website or to the Facebook group where they can post their favorite recipe, and now you have community interacting with each other instead of just sending out a passive postcard. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Here's again about your rent. You can do a rent chart, especially if you're farming a neighborhood where there are a high number of rentals. So I want you to think about neighborhoods in, let's take Murfreesboro, for example. Evergreen Farms is one of the neighborhoods that one of the many of the five different hedge funds that are in town are buying up because their HOA still allows rentals. So what percentage of the homes in the neighborhood are rentals? So if I chose Evergreen Farms as a neighborhood I wanted to farm, I would specifically maybe not do the whole neighborhood. I would find which homes are rentals and target specifically only to the renters in the neighborhood. Yes. So now I don't have to mail to the whole neighborhood. I'm only targeting to the ones who are not owner occupied. I find out that information through the tax record.
Okay.
Because I can run a report specifically in Evergreen Farms for all the houses that are not owner occupied.
Right. Okay.
And then I only want to send information to those people if I'm only trying to convert. That's how you take a neighborhood that has 2,000 homes and you can break it down into, I only want to target the 400 homes in the neighborhood that are rentals. Does that make sense?
Makes sense. I love it.
Me too. Thanks. I appreciate it, Cameron. Real estate can be intimidating. So again, something that's eye-catching, something that gets people attention. You can scour online sources for kind of pre-programmed or pre-templated ones and pick the best two or three that you like and create your own if you want. Or you
I'll
can
send
buy
you guys a picture of my two dogs like that, because that's exactly what they look like.
And do you know what's better about it for you, Dina, is that if you used your own dogs, then you have something to talk about.
I know.
Like, hey, did you get the postcard that has my two babies on it? Then it's personal, right? And now all your neighborhood knows that these are your two babies instead of just two random dogs.
Right.
All right, as far as resources, you definitely are going to use the tax record to help you identify or to start building your address list or your database. You want to start collecting email addresses, so you can use the tax record for the mailing address and the homeowner's name, but you want to start collecting email addresses and getting those from the people, not just outgoing passive messages one way. You want them interacting. You want them to socialize. You want to build community. GeoFarm and Prospect Plus. GeoFarm is and Listing Grabber are both websites that are kind of pre-programmed, templated programs that agents can pay where it does the work for you. Again, this is not my favorite idea because I want it to be personal and I want you to personalize it based on who your target client and target neighborhood is and who you want to work with. But these two are available that you can do some more digging and see if they have something that interests you. Prospect Plus is a company that has already templated newsletters or postcards for you, and you can buy kind of a system from them. But again, I want you, and I'm encouraging you, don't just send 12 boring ass postcards. Send something that's interesting, something of value, something that gets people interacting and talking to you, not just hoping that one out of 300 call you.
Laura,
yes.
Can you talk to us about White Pages?
So White Pages Premium, it's like $5 a month, will allow you to find the phone number for anybody, pretty much anybody, if they can be found. So it'll even give you their family members, which is creepy and stalkerish. Like you start calling like the aunt or uncle or grandma of the person you're trying to reach. I think that's just shady and salesy, but right. You can use White Pages Premium to start, you know, to track down phone numbers for people given an address or a name. They're not always accurate. I would say White Pages Premium is probably, you know, about 85% accurate with the number that they have or the address that they have. I would tell you that you should start building your list organically and naturally, but that is a tool you can use to grab phone numbers if you need it.
They don't have email addresses, right?
No, White Pages Premium does not that I know of. But okay. You can use Red X has email addresses, I think. Red X also has phone numbers.
What is that?
It's just another dialer.
REDEX?
I think it's just REDX, but you can Google it.
Okay.
And then Pinterest ideas for drop buys. So again, there's thousands of ideas out there for like if you want to touch somebody 6 times a year, 12 times a year, 3 times a month, whatever it is. There are tons of ideas out there that you could duplicate. And then I put Amazon for low cost gifts. So I've seen where agents send an ice cream scoop and they put a tag on it that says to find out the latest scoop in our neighborhood, give me a call. Maybe they hosted an ice cream social in the neighborhood and gave ice cream scoops out to everybody. Or in the winter months, you know, an ice scraper with a tag on it, and you can be as creative as you want with the tags. But again, find creative, low-cost ideas of 3D items that you could give out or hand out that you could also market, brand, or promote, but things that have a shelf life that people are going to use.
Yes, I recommend koozies as well. That seems to be the thing that people hold on to the longest as far as shelf life. Koozies are awesome.
And everybody has a drawer of 100 of them.
That's right.
So, and they take them out on their boat. You know, they have them for their barbecues, whatever, but koozies work. Anything else that anybody wants to add or questions that anybody has about anything we covered? Yes, no, maybe so.
Not me.
Okay. So big thing. Okay. Dina?
No, I said no. Sounds good. Thank you.
Okay.
So, I do have one.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know if I missed it at some point. Is there any way to tell if it's not your subdivision, if other people are farming it?
No, other than checking in with the neighbors to ask them, hey, do you receive anything? But here's my whole thing. I don't care if other realtors are farming it, because if you learn nothing from me today, what I'm going to send and what I'm going to create is way different than any agent is doing. Because I'm creating a community, I'm creating and housing an online portal where people are going to go for the information, and I'm making sure that they're getting things of value, not just postcards. And I can promise you, any agent that's farming a neighborhood, if they're doing the bare minimum, and they're sending passive messages that are one-way messages.
Okay.
So I don't care if there's five agents in the neighborhood. There's only one Lardall.
Amen.
Right? Thank God.
Right.
Thank God. Here's what I'm going to tell you. So just to recap, research the neighborhood, gather the data on the neighborhood to make sure that there's enough turnover, make sure the sales price, make sure the days on the market work for your marketing and how you work. Be creative, plan out, set a budget, plan out how many times and what ways you're going to reach out to these people. Plan out your messages, make sure that they have a call to action, make sure there's something of value. Try to implement your three-prong approach where you're creating the community, you're controlling the content on the community, you are sending things of value that drive people to the community that you created, that encourages them to interact or download or engage, and be the source and the expert in the neighborhood by hosting community events, by putting on events. Remember, events are, they give you reasons to call people to invite them. They give you reasons to call them and thank them for participating or showing up. It also gives them reason to call and say, I'm sorry, I missed you. Wanted to introduce myself to you. I put on a canned food drive last week. I didn't get a chance to talk to you at the event. Wanted to introduce myself to you and talk to you a little bit more about what I do. You know, events give you reasons to make outgoing calls or outgoing messages. So again, create the community, provide things of value that drive people to the community, and then have events where the community can see you and you have a presence. Be creative in what you send, make it personal, make it relatable, make it something of value, and try to do it as inexpensively as you possibly can.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Laura.
You're very welcome. I hope that your wheels are spinning. I'm looking forward to seeing you guys implement some of the things we talked about. And if you have any questions or need anything else, please let me know. And I have enjoyed chatting with you today. I hope you have a wonderful day. And I'm here
to see you guys again.
I know. I'll see your faces soon. Okay.
Take care, guys.
Thank you. Bye.
You guys have a great day.
You too.
Bye. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.